You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello and welcome to Oh What a Time, the history podcast that tries to decide if the past was a time when you'd wake up thinking to yourself, I feel cheated that I was born now, actually. Yeah. I wish I was born in 1,000 years' time. This is too hard. My name is Ellis James.
I am Tom Crane.
And we don't have Chris Skull this week because he has another job and he's jet setting. He is working
selfishly
abroad.
He's holding down other work.
He's selfishly
Which
holding
he
down
knows.
Other work abroad.
When we started the show, that you must drop everything else, be that family, career, it has to be history first.
But, Tom, history never stops. That's the great thing about history. And so even though he is abroad, having a great life with a great career, we've decided to get stuck in. Each week on this show, of course, we're looking at a new historical subject. And today we're going to be discussing the presidents of the United States of America.
Yeah, the big ones.
The big ones.
Would you say the most powerful? I don't know, it's definitely in the past, the most powerful person in kind of, I'd say, in the mid part of the last century onwards, I'd say. I'm not sure if the president is still the most powerful person in the world. I probably not. I think there's an argument, somewhat like Zuckerberg or...
I would say that they are, actually.
Would you really? Even more so than, let's say...
Yeah, Zuckerberg doesn't have he doesn't have an army.
Okay. An army of dweebs. His Silicon Valley army.
Zuckerberg, I don't think, can shoot me.
Yes.
Can he? Maybe. Can he? I don't know. Bezos could buy a gun on his own website and shoot me.
Yeah. And the best thing is, Ellis, that gun would be with him within 24 hours if he has Prime. And we can assume that Bezos has Prime.
It's a good service.
He must have Prime,
surely. He gets everything on Amazon at cost price. He's got a great life.
Is he still having to buy movies on Prime? If Bezos is at home and he looks at, let's say, Oppenheimer, it's just been released, is he still having to choose $17.99 and buy it? Or does he get that stuff free through some mega Prime that no one else is aware of?
Do you know what I'm going to do? As soon as we finish recording, I'm going to go onto my Amazon Prime, because I'm going to log in as a new person. I'm going to put in jeff.bezos@gmail.com and just start guessing passwords. Amazon is great, number one. Amazon is great, $. Amazon is great, !! And then surely then you get Jeff Bezos Mega Prime.
What a feeling that would be. Because you could definitely, I would say, once a fortnight, sneak something of less than a grand's value into his shopping basket and he wouldn't notice.
Is he one of those rich people?
Yeah.
Who is so rich it's all irrelevant to him and he just buys it and he doesn't think? And then he realises that he's got a Lamborghini that he's forgotten about. Or is he one of those rich people who itemises everything? And he would notice if you were buying a can of deodorant on his Prime.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's that guy. I do.
Yeah.
When you read interviews, he's so detailed oriented. He's so much about the customer and everything has to be exactly right. And that's why Amazon I think we can agree, a success.
It's a good service.
He's no longer working out of the garage that he started in. It's no longer just books from a garage. So, yeah, I think he probably would notice if you did too much. But I think once a month, less than a grand, it's fine. It's absolutely fine.
This sounds bad, what I'm about to say. Right? I had to buy a traditional Welsh costume for my son for Culture Day at his school.
Okay.
But obviously, St. David's Day is on March the 1st, and their Culture Day was in October or something. So all of the usual shops that you would buy a traditional Welsh costume for boys and girls, they were either sold out or, you know, they weren't stocking them.
Yeah.
And I thought, hang on, there's shops all over Wales that sell like traditional Welsh stuff, ranging from the traditional costumes for kids to a ruler with a map of Ceredigion on it.
Yep.
We all know that, well, actually... Probably not. If you weren't born in Wales, you don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, a pencil case with an image of Caernarfon Castle on it, etc., right?
Yeah.
So I tried a few of these shops and they were saying, yeah, we can get it to you in 3 weeks. And obviously Culture Day was looming. And eventually I went with Amazon and I was blown away at how good the service was. And I felt guilty to my core. But I thought, I feel sorry for every shop owner, independent shop owners listening to this now, is considering throwing their phone into a river.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so for crying out loud, let's have a plural economy, buy elsewhere.
But I do miss.
It's Culture Day and you need a Welsh costume, ASA, and I cannot emphasise enough, you need a Welsh costume quickly.
I think this is a fair deal to any independent shop owner listening. If you are able to get me anything within 12 to 24 hours, then I will start using you.
100.
That's what at the moment, that is what the other option is. I can do that. I can get literally anything within 24 hours. Anyway, but you know, God bless the high street.
No, God bless the high street. For God's sake, we cannot turn this into an Amazon love-in. For God's sake.
Should we move on to some correspondence as a way of sort
yes.
of, before we lose all our listeners?
It's not about good Amazon, is it? Is it, for crying out loud?
This is from, great name, Tom Grist, and it is about the one-day time machine. Here we are again, Britain's greatest...
Does he work in a mill?
Very nice. Tom Grist has said, "Hello, lads. Hope all is well. I'm a big fan of the show. And for my one-day time machine, I'd love to get involved in an act of mass hysteria." I like this. You know, the dance till I drop in the dancing plague of 1518. Have you read about this dancing plague? Apparently, there's a plague where people just started dancing spontaneously around the country and they just couldn't stop.
There is. Yeah. That book, Extraordinary Popular Delusions.
Which you can get on Amazon within 24 hours.
Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, which is a study in like crowd psychology.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which I have read. But for God's sake, buy that from your local bookshop. And I cannot emphasise that enough.
So he says, "You know, the dance that I drop in the dancing plague of 1518, or maybe practicing my purring with those meowing nuns, it just seems like a laugh. Alternatively," and this really made me laugh, "loading up an iPod with Sandstorm by Darude." Do you remember that song?
Which one was that?
It was like an early 2000s dance hit. "And then plugging it into the ears of the first peasant I meet in the Middle Ages seems like a great deal of fun, with the added bonus of potential religion being made up about me." I like that idea. That's what I found quite amusing, is the idea of going up to someone in medieval Britain and putting your ear pods into their ears and playing them something just, you know, William Orbit or something really trancy, something just no sounds that they'd be used to.
I think it would be too full on.
Do you?
I think if you played, say, early Bob Dylan, where it's just him and an acoustic guitar, for instance, or
so ease him in with that. Simon and Garfunkel.
That. That, etc.
Yeah.
I think if you played 808 State, it would just be such an assault. It was such an assault on the senses.
What do you think someone's doing then? Let's say it's a normal sort of farmhand, a peasant. You're going up to him and you're playing some really hard drum and bass into his ear. This out. What's happening? Are his shoes getting blown clean off? What's the reaction?
I think they would assume that it was the work of the devil, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah.
You can't go from a world with no recorded music to the Chemical Brothers in one leap.
Without taking something. And I think that's too much.
You say, right then, put that turnip down. Take this and listen to this. And get
half of this. See how you go. And then listen to this. I'll be back in half an hour. Yeah. There's a really interesting book, by the way, which
take
is called,
half of one of these.
Have you read a book called How
Have
Music...
you got any bottled water? No, of course you haven't.
Dance close to a stream, because he will need some. There's a really interesting book called How Music Works. Have you read that?
No.
It's fascinating. It's by the guy from Talking Heads, whose name is...
What, David Byrne?
David Byrne, there you go.
Yeah.
And he talks about how the places in which music is formed and first kind of thought of affects the type of music we listen to, and how in Britain this slow sort of choral tradition of singular voices which move quite slowly and simple harmonies came about because of the echoes of the church, basically, because that's where music was first performed en masse for choirs.
What so an interesting book slow, that I'm not going to buy on Amazon.
It's fascinating. It's really affected the rhythm of the music, whereas out in Africa, more tribal music, where you're out in the plains, there's none of this sort of echo and rebound, which has led to a more sort of drum-heavy type of music. That's why traditional music... So to come back to this point, if you did play a peasant drum and bass, they'd be so unfamiliar with this sort of rather frenetic drum beat because it goes against everything of the evolution of British music at that time. It would be so, so different. Whereas maybe other parts of the world, not so much. But here, it would blow their mind.
Playing a peasant drum and bass.
There you go. Well, there are worse ways to spend your day in One Day Time Machine than testing that out. If you have any other ideas that you want to send us for One Day Time Machine or any other things that have cropped up on the show, do get in contact. We love to hear from you. And here is how you do just that.
All right, you horrible lot. Here's how you can stay in touch with the show. You can email us at hello@ohwhatatime.com and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ohwhatatimepod. Now clear off.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So, on this week's episode, as I said a few minutes ago, we are discussing the presidents of the United States of America. We've chosen four. I will be discussing John Adams and Andrew Jackson.
And I will be discussing Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, you're a fan of Lyndon Johnson.
I studied the 60s at A-level, so I remember a little bit, but it's over 25 years ago, so I'm looking forward to reacquainting myself with Lyndon Johnson.
He's a fascinating guy. He's also definitely one of the most sort of divisive presidents of all time. That will actually be in the bonus section for subscribers. If you want to subscribe, you'll hear about Lyndon Johnson. But first of all, I'm going to kick things off by talking about Theodore Roosevelt. Now, do you know much about Theodore Roosevelt? Is that someone you've studied at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt, he's a fascinating guy. He is the 26th president of the United States. He served between 1901 to 1909. And he's the only president to win the Nobel Peace Prize, which is pretty cool. And at 42, is still the youngest person ever to become president. Are you 42? Is that right?
43.
You're 43. Okay, so a year ago, would you have felt ready to be?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
I woke up on my 42nd birthday and I said to Izzy, it's time.
It's time. Why haven't they called? What are you running on? What are your main policies, let's say, then? So you're forced to be president now. You need two policies to run on. What's your vibe?
Free Netflix.
Like that. Okay, tell you what. I will say at this point, I'm listening.
And bear in mind the advertising we've already given him. Free Amazon Prime.
Free Amazon.
The rest can look after itself.
You would absolutely hoover up some voters with that.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Completely.
You'd J. Edgar Hoover up a load of voters.
Lovely stuff. So Roosevelt was born in upstate New York in 1858. He was quite a sort of like privileged background, the offspring of a leading Republican family. And even before becoming president, he had like an insane CV from his 42 years of life before that. He was, okay, check this out, a naturalist, an adventurer, a writer, a historian. He was a rower, a journalist, a magazine editor, a lawyer, a cattle rancher, a police commissioner, an army officer, and then finally a politician.
People accuse me of having too many podcasts. They say, come on, Ellis. Sushi Distance Sports Bar, The Show with John, Oh What a Time, Feast of Football. You can't do all of these. I'm like, yeah, check out Roosevelt, mate.
In his defence, well, he wasn't doing all of those at the same time. He was running those sort of back-to-back, a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas
yeah,
you're cramming them all into the same point in life.
Yeah, same week.
My worry would be, I think, as an employer, every time he came, would be, I'm getting the sense you're not a sticker, if you know what I mean. If you've done that many things, Theodore, my concern would be, if I'm going to give you this job, can you guarantee you're not just going to go, after 2 months, I'm going to do something different now, I'm going to be a pilot?
Are you really the best cattle rancher for the job? Because your skills seem to lie elsewhere.
That one does sort of stick out a bit, cattle rancher. It's quite an about turn, doesn't it?
I admire it, though, because it means he was working with his hands, you know, as well as the cerebral stuff.
Yeah. It feels like someone who's living in the city and then has watched a documentary about someone who's living a more pure life outside.
Yeah.
Like Channel 4 documentary at 10 p.m, quite slow pace, and he thought, I'm going to do that instead.
He basically did an escape to the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then thought, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go back and be a police commissioner. Have you ever done that before? No.
Lockdown had such a profound effect on us that Claire and I watched every episode of Escape to the Country. We completed it. We're constantly thinking, maybe we need to get out. It's not really surprising that he could tough it out doing all these things, because he was a really hard guy, Roosevelt. He, for example, you'll like this, he boxed regularly. He loved boxing, and his boxing even cost him the sight in one eye, a fact that he then kept hidden for decades after that. One of his favourite things to do, even throughout winter, was to go skinny dipping in the Potomac River, in the depths of winter.
That sounds cold.
Thoughts on that?
I mean, it's now a kind of hipster thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also there's Wim Hof, I've read all of his books.
Okay.
I like the idea of becoming almost sort of unkillable just because I have the odd cold shower.
Yeah.
There must be something in it.
Claire's family loves skinny dipping. Her mum loves it. She loves doing it.
Do they do it together? Because that's weird if they do.
They have, but they're quite far apart in the sea, I think, when they do.
Okay.
My thing is I'd feel too vulnerable. It's the idea of having everything exposed to whatever is swimming around me.
Yeah.
Having a barracuda sort of staring down my penis with intent or whatever. I don't know what's down there. But you know what I mean? I'm too vulnerable. I'm too vulnerable. Same reason I go to sleep with pants on in case someone breaks in. I need something between me and nature.
The last thing I want to do is to have to call the police in tears naked. Let me have pyjama bottoms on.
So this wasn't the end of his sort of hard, tough sort of life practice. For example, he also learned the art of jiu-jitsu after he'd lost the sight in one eye. So boxing didn't put him off martial arts. He learned it from a chap called Yoshita Sugu, who was a pioneer of martial arts in the United States. And Roosevelt loved it so much, he then insisted the entire American army were taught this martial art as well. That's how much he loved it.
Wow.
Most impressively, he is the only president to have been awarded the Medal of Honor, which was awarded by President Clinton in 2001 to recognize his bravery during the Spanish-American War of 1898. Unfortunately, he was unable to make the ceremony. He'd been dead for 56 years by that point. But it's also worth mentioning, there's so many of the things which paint the sort of character he is. He only became president when he was serving as vice president to William McKinley, and McKinley was assassinated. And this is the thing I've thought about. The idea of taking a job when the previous guy has been assassinated, to have the guts to do that, it would worry me on such a profound level. Obviously, you work towards this, you're serving your country, but you've literally just seen your work colleague killed in that role. It's not the ideal way to get a promotion.
Yeah, we're WhatsApping another comedian saying, listen, Skull's been assassinated. Do you fancy doing our history podcast?
My favourite story, though, of Roosevelt's toughness, and I love this, came from 1912. This blew my mind. He was giving a speech in Milwaukee. Midway through, he announced, he was just doing a speech, and midway through, he announced he'd been shot. And he showed the crowd his papers, which had a bullet hole through them. Like a cartoon, like there's a bullet hole through his reading papers that he's reading a speech from. And then he lifted his shirt to show the bloody mark where he'd been shot. Now, what are you doing at that point?
There's not a speech that I want to give enough for me to finish if I've been shot.
Well, Roosevelt continued to speak for another 90 minutes after being shot, refusing to allow his aides to take him to hospital. The bullet had lodged itself near his ribs and remained there for the rest of his life.
There's that great scene in I'm Alan Partridge where Alan steps on a spike and he still gives the speech at the corporate event. You know, he's being sick with the pain and he's groaning, and it's very, very funny. I cannot believe that he gave that speech without sort of every now and then going, Anyway. Oh, where was I? Fuck, Jesus.
Sort of biting down on the lectern.
The relationship of between the White House, obviously federalism, Jesus Christ, our right honourable colleague in Virginia had a word with me yesterday in Congress, and
it doesn't specify here, but
could
the way,
I have a drink of water, please?
Or something stronger. So this is the guy he is. This sort of tough way of being was reflected in his personal philosophies in life. This is what's quite interesting about him. In an early speech he gave in 1899, while serving as the governor of New York, Roosevelt advocated for, and I quote, a life of toil and effort, of labour and strife.
That's a vote loser.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm thinking. He said, real men, as he added, do not shrink from danger, from hardship, or from bitter toil.
We've got the, you know, there's an election coming up in the UK at some point this year.
Yep.
Can you imagine Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer standing on a platform of bitter toil?
Make Britain bitter. Bitter again. Whatever.
One vote for the toil party.
But despite this, and this is why he's kind of quite a multifaceted type of candidate, despite this sort of tough outlook, he also had a profound social conscience. So he was a Republican, but he was also extremely progressive in his outlook. So his main point was that he felt that governments, and this is what he was quoted as saying, the main duty of government was to mitigate social evil, which, to be fair, is also completely different. We talk about our candidates today. That is not how they present themselves. It's all wedge politics and this idea of grabbing some voter base simply because you think it'll work for you rather than what you believe in. He obviously had a deep idea of what your role as a public servant was to mitigate social evils. I think that's quite interesting and feels quite rare. And this outlook was also seen again when he ran for office once again in 1912, but this time he ran as a third party progressive candidate when he became the first American politician to call for a system of public health care in the United States, which he referred to as the National Health Service. And to that, he also added the call for a minimum wage, a guaranteed day off each week, strong trade unions, national insurance schemes, and also limiting the working day to 8 hours. I mean, how exciting it must have been to have a political option who offered such fundamental change. And that's a thing you'll never see today now. It's all little increments and kind of political choices, but it's not those sort of fundamental social changes which will completely change the way you live your life.
The 8 hour day, incredible.
Exactly. Huge. And the idea, simply the idea of a guaranteed day off each week. These things that now we take for granted, the idea of a weekend, but actually cementing it that people have to have this time off.
We routinely podcast at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
I do, yeah.
Half past seven last week. Oh my God, what would he make of that, eh?
Roosevelt will be livid.
Bitter toil, 21st century style. Why are you podcasting at 7:30 a.m? Because I've got to take my daughter to drama.
So it is family first.
I've got to take my son to Little Kickers.
So it's no surprise then that in the 1912 election, Teddy Roosevelt did just fantastically on those policies. And this is incredible when you think about it. Despite being a third-party candidate, so he wasn't Republican, he wasn't Democrat, wasn't standing for either of those parties, he came second in the election, taking more than a quarter of the popular vote, which is over 4 million people, and pushing the Republicans into third place.
Wow.
In the single greatest triumph of a third-party candidate in the entirety of American political history. If you could imagine today the idea of a non-Republican or non-Democrat candidate coming second.
Yeah. It occasionally happens, don't you, the sort of the third candidate in a US election.
All of this work, his kind of incredible sort of social change, what he sort of represented for the country, really, has obviously left him with an incredible legacy. A legacy that was so great that it even secured him a place on Mount Rushmore in 1927 alongside Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, of course, founding fathers, and Abraham Lincoln. And in this case, Roosevelt was intended to symbolise America's development as a nation and the start of its new potential, basically.
You've got to be really certain that you've chosen the correct president if you're about to carve his face into rock.
The size of a mountain.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you think to yourself as you're sort of halfway through the chin thinking,
yeah,
can we change that to can we change that to someone else? A chin is a chin,
things,
isn't it?
If you kept things not too specific, all the features a little bit vague.
Yeah.
They can all be tweaked. I was thinking about this. How would you feel having your face on the side of a mountain? Let's say, is there a mountain? Is there like a large outcrop near Carmarthen? Or what's the nearest thing?
Preseli Mountains, I suppose.
There you go.
Near my
so they're chiselling your face onto
into
the side
Preseli
of...
Mountains. Do you know what, Tom? Exactly. I would feel overwhelmed.
And if you were going for it, what scene are you looking for them to depict? Is it you playing with your children? Is it you podcasting?
No, it's me.
What is it?
It's me on my phone. Choosing my fantasy football team.
With one hand down your pants. Just sort of like
carved into
mind elsewhere.
He's by far the most modern of the presidents on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because obviously, you know, George Washington was the first president. Thomas Jefferson was the third. Abraham Lincoln, you know, in the 1860s, the 16th, then his term of office had only just ended, really.
It's amazing, really, isn't it? What a thing to have done. To literally have yourself immortalised on the side of a mountain is incredible. And he is still loved today. This is what's interesting. Indeed, there's sort of regularly published lists of the greatest presidents ever. Teddy Roosevelt averages out around about number 5.
Oh,
and
wow.
And in 2010, he came second, with only his fifth cousin, FDR, the longest serving and wartime president, ahead of him. So in some polls, he's considered the second greatest American president of all time.
Oh, well, that's a fairly decent record, isn't it?
What a dude. Yeah. And he can sort of, you know, he can break your neck with a ninjutsu move or whatever. He's got all these stuff as well. He can skinny dip with the best of them.
Fair play to him. So that is the end of part one. Part two will be with you tomorrow. They'll be dropping on whatever device it is that you listen to your podcasts on. However, if you would like your episodes of Oh What a Time all in one lovely go, why don't you become an Oh What a Time full-timer? There are lots of benefits to being an Oh What a Time full-timer. You get episodes in one go. You get bonus episodes as well.
No adverts.
Advert-free.
Yeah, exactly.
No adverts.
People will think you're cool.
And there's, of course, the cool dividend.
It'll probably give you a sort of strut that you haven't previously had. You'll bob down the road in a different way.
It will give you a sort of social cachet that you probably never had before.
Exactly.
Because also, you don't even need to wear clothing or a badge or anything. People will just know.
Do wear clothing, though, just to be clear.
Yeah, do wear clothes. People are like, oh my God, he's not what's time full-time. He is.
Exactly.
Look at his gait. Look at the way he struts. God.
If you want to sign up to that, you can do that using whatever app you use. Go on Apple, Spotify, whatever, the options there. Or you can go to ohwhatatime.com and all the options are down there. And thank you very much for joining us either way. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow for more presidential fun. Bye.